I love you, Banks. Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, welcome to the pod.
We're so excited to be here today because we have a very special guest.
We do.
We have Justin and or Jay, he goes by both, who is a therapist and licensed clinical social worker for ADHD, ADHD-focused content creator, and public speaker. He loves motivating and inspiring individuals and teams to be their best in the midst of performance anxiety and task paralysis by analysis. Well, we could use that. He can be found at the Superior Center in Plymouth, Michigan at www.superior-center.com, or you can find him on Instagram and TikTok under ADHD Therapist _J. The links will be in the show notes also if you want to look there.
Yes.
So Jay, welcome.
Welcome. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. How are you today?
We're doing good. We're doing good.
Yeah, we're so excited to chat with you. We did a little episode about ADHD, but we're not experts, so we wanted to have you on and get some info about it and maybe see how it intersects with our main theme of the podcast, which is codependency and how to just interact and relate to other people.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, I'm super excited for this.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's dive into the first question. We'll just get right to it. What is ADHD exactly, and what are some of the behaviors associated with it?
Yeah, so ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition in the DSM. So essentially, some warning signs or some behaviors that you might see will come along with that are individuals who either are inattentive, hyperactive, or impulsive. That's kind of the main three caveats of it. Under the symptoms, you might see things as maybe somebody drifting off or daydreaming a lot, or maybe they, on the other end of the spectrum, you'll see people who are running a lot or walk, or in adult world, I always say we're like maybe walking really fast, or we always seem like we're in a hurry, or maybe we're fidgeting a lot and things like that. So those are kind of like baseline symptoms that you could see. It's a condition that affects children, teens, and adults, although a lot of people only think it's a childhood disorder. So that's a misconception that is finally being broken down a little bit more in 2024. But still have some confusion where people think it can only be seen in childhood. So my whole thing actually with my practice, Superior Center, is I started as a solopreneur. So I was taking pretty much anybody with ADHD at that point. And the reason I decided to go for an ADHD specific center is just because there are pretty much no ADHD specific resources out there. You're usually having a lot of people who are thrown into generalist centers or generalist practices with a lot of people who don't know either what they're doing clinically or don't have that personal experience because maybe they don't have ADHD. And thankfully for me, I have both. So it just kind of worked out. It just really worked really good. And I started solo in June. We started full-time in June. There's a whole backstory because I've been doing the practice part-time for like 2 years. But basically, we started full-time in June with about 25 people that I transferred from a group practice and some new people I got. Within a month, we doubled my size from 25 to 50 people. And now, just fast forward from summer to winter now, I mean, we have about 10, we're getting like, I think, 10 therapists on board between now and April. So that's, so it's definitely grown, you know, quite a bit. So basically, I'm telling you all this right now just because I went from taking a lot of people to now my whole specialty mainly is adults with ADHD. And even though this wasn't my intended specialty, I work with a lot of women with ADHD, which is a big other stigma that we're trying to break down because a lot of people still don't see women having ADHD. So that's kind of one of my new passions I'm advocating for.
Wow, that is so amazing. I feel like that's true. When I hear people talk about ADHD, mostly they're talking about children. And then if somebody is an adult and has those symptoms, they might define that differently. Like, oh, they're lazy. They're a bad listener. It's all these negative, descriptors rather than attributing it to that possible, thing.
Like stereotypes almost, right? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, what we think of a lot in society with ADHD is we tend to see it as, I call it little boy syndrome. In fact, I call it white little boy syndrome because there's a whole stigma with women of color not being able to get their diagnosis of ADHD when they need it too. So a lot of times we think of it as this disorder for little hyperactive wild white boys, basically from like 6 to 12. And then all of a sudden you hit puberty or you become an adult and hit 18 and suddenly you just don't have it anymore. And that's really not the case with ADHD because it's a neurodevelopmental condition. It's lifelong. It gets managed sometimes better in adulthood, sometimes worse in adulthood, which we can talk about that if that comes up today. But there's a lot of times where we have things in adulthood that, help us manage it more. And then sometimes we're masking it a little bit more too as we become adults, right? So when we do see those symptoms flare up, it's not flared up as a disorder as much as it is, it's flaring up as a very negative attribute to someone.
That's
That makes a
true.
lot of sense, actually. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the whole masking thing too, which is so prevalent in adults mainly. I mean, yeah.
Because you kind of learn what's acceptable and what's not. And so when people respond negatively to something, then you start trying to mask that, even though it's natural for you to be behaving that way. You think, oh, that's getting a bad response.
Yeah. Yeah,
No,
that's right.
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, interesting. So, what are some, and I like positive consequences to having ADHD, like things that people are really good at because of ADHD, and then some negative consequences to having ADHD?
Yeah, so I would say for the most part, a lot of us with ADHD, we tend to be very creative individuals. So, I mean, it worked out really well for me just because, all these people on TikTok and Instagram and all that. So it's something I'm very proud of. And I'm very proud of it just for the reason being that I always have, since I was 12, I always wanted to be a content creator. And that was just something I always wanted to do. And of course, adults in your life and teachers in your life are like, no, that's not something you should aspire to be, or you just need to go do this or do that. And, whatever. So basically went to school and then I became a therapist. I always say this, I became a therapist and social worker on accident. And it just worked out because it helped me, build a whole platform and things like that. But, on the same token, this is something I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to educate and inspire and entertain people. And I really give it so much credit with my ADHD. And so a negative consequence, I guess, to be on that turn is because we are impulsive individuals and we are just like super hyperactive. We could have a lot of negative consequences from that with split second decisions, maybe not thinking things through. So fun fact, I actually got fired in 2022 from a job that I thought was going to be my forever job, actually. And I don't have this officially confirmed because there was no official reason given, but from what I've heard from the grapevine, it basically was because of my growing TikTok. And
Wow.
apparently I may or may not have posted something they didn't like, which I don't even know what that content would be because I wasn't posting anything about the job or anything. And they also knew about my platform that was already growing when they hired me. So it was just really interesting with that. But I don't really hold bitterness toward it because even though that was like a negative consequence for me and losing your job, something might have happened. It led me into just doubling down on my true authentic attributes of myself, right? And then it
Yeah.
ultimately led me to better career success anyway.
Yeah. Wow, that's fascinating. And you're actually not the first creator that I've heard this story about before of, especially in the therapy field, if they start popping off on TikTok or Instagram, for some reason a lot of companies will can them out of nowhere, or even I've heard this in other industries too. It's really interesting. Why do you think that is? That's kind of fascinating that they would just well, not fascinating. I mean, it sucks for your situation, but I mean, I'm glad that where it led to where it did for you, but I'm just saying, why do you think that they would do that? I mean, that's crazy, right?
I mean, if I'm talking from a more general sense, right? Because with mine, to be honest with you, I really don't know. I don't even for mine have it officially confirmed that was the reason or not. That's just what I've heard from people who I've previously worked with and something they've heard. So I don't know. I didn't hear anything from HR personally, but I would probably say that I think a lot of people in companies, I think they're afraid of somebody outshining them, and I think they're afraid of having somebody have a bigger voice that could have better influence in the company. And I've also seen this on the reverse end of things. I know a lot of people who actually get fired from jobs because of their following, but then they get incredibly better opportunities, whether it's career-wise or even starting a business or whatever. But they just get better opportunities because of their following. So basically, it's kind of like people don't want to be outshined, but they also want to be invited in. So it's one of those weird, just like if you're shining, if you started from the bottom and now you're here, they kind of want you to go. But if you're like a shining person, then it's kind of like, oh, I want this great person to hire because like Yeah, and I say this too a lot of the time too, because when back in 2021, 22, like when I first started doing content, I got a lot of backlash from therapists actually. And I got a lot of backlash from social workers. Just for the reason being that back then, still even then, social media was so stigmatized for our field. I think our field and teachers are the two fields that are actually kind of growing in the social media space a lot. But I actually got my first 10,000 followers. And so I tried to offer a free training of like how you can grow your therapy following ethically and like do it, whatever. And I got like dragged online for it because people said I was promoting such unethical behaviors and this, that, and that, whatever. There were doctors who, even before like my following was smaller, they wouldn't want to work with me. I've contacted some of those doctors since then. And like suddenly now that I have a following, they want me to come meet with their team. So it does, it shouldn't be this way, but there are opportunities that come with it. And also people do look at you differently. So it's kind of like when you're first starting out, people are like, don't do that. But then once you're here, people want to be a part of it. It's really weird, actually.
That is strange. It ended up working out for the best for you because your content is super engaging and informative. I remember one of the first videos I saw was one where you were like mannequins in the store that have certain clothes, and you would be like, "So this is Stacy. She's a therapist."
Yeah, that's like become a series in and of itself. We actually just, it's so funny because me and my friend just recorded another one yesterday in Target that I think we'll release either today or tomorrow, probably.
Oh my gosh, I love that. It's actually so hilarious. I love it. I was wondering too, like, when if you have ADHD, is it affecting how you perceive yourself and grow your identity and how you perceive other people and relationships?
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's kind of weird, right? Because if you don't know you have ADHD, it's one of those things where you obviously are hiding the, you aren't trying to hide the ADHD because you don't know you have ADHD, but you do know that maybe you're disorganized. That's another thing you'll see with ADHD is maybe you'll see homes that are cluttered or disorganized or messy of some kind, or maybe there's some life skills that you lack, right? So cooking is something I'm just like, honest to God, I'm telling everyone right now, like my 2024 resolution or whatever is just to cook more because I just don't have the patience for it, like at all. And now that I run a business, I really don't have the patience for it. So it's one of those things where I'm trying to like just learn how to do basic things better or whatever. But it does affect the way you interact with the world, right? Because if you don't have these skills that a lot of people do, there's often a lot of embarrassment or shame by that. And so often you are trying to hide those traits from people. It can be very stressful, right? So you're often in, if we're talking about dating relationships, for example, right? You're probably comparing yourself to your partner a lot. And a lot of times people with ADHD, a lot of us have lower self-esteem to where we feel like we're not adequate or we're not worthy. And so because of that, a lot of us actually get into relationships with people who, maybe aren't the best for us just because we feel like maybe that person won't leave us in a way. And so that's something I can truly relate to from 18 to like, I think it even went on even like 23, 24, 25, right when I started becoming a therapist, even it was something I realized that was still within me.
Yeah. Wow. That's so fascinating. And there's a lot of crossover there with what we talk about with codependency because that comparison aspect and feeling like you're always to blame and like you might lose them. So you're trying to morph kind of
Yeah.
into what they need so that they don't leave, so that they don't abandon you, that kind of feeling.
Yeah. It's
Yeah.
crazy. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it too is ironically the stability, because that's a lot of the stuff that we don't have a lot of that as ADHDers, basically, right? So we don't always have consistency, we don't have stability, even in our own general life. I mean, one of the things that we struggle with is we can't even get into a routine a lot of the time, or we struggle to get into a routine a lot of the time. And so to have like that one person in our life that is just stable and won't be there, it's something that, we get a big dopamine rush from, right? And that's another factor in this too, if we're going to go into the, biology of it all. ADHD is a disorder where you don't have a lot of dopamine being produced for you. So when you have it, it just feels really great. I always tell people all the time, like, if something like really just super nice happens to me, like you could probably read it on my face, or not even super nice, just like Just something basic. Like, I'm a whole entrepreneur and can make money whenever I want. If I find like a dollar on the street, I'll just be so happy the rest of the day. So, because it's just such a big dopamine rush to have something like that happen, right? So to have a partner that just stays within your life, even if it isn't like the best situation, even if they're abusive, for example, even that could still be more dopamine producing than just not having anybody. Could I even say even stress and anxiety? Sometimes that produces dopamine too. So sometimes I always say we'd rather be stressed out than bored and lonely.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I hear that. I
Yeah.
mean, I feel like that is how I feel when I'm in kind of a codependent spiral or like control moment with somebody. It is a rush. Like, it's addicting, that sense of like, gotta get that high back. You know, that's what Brooke and I talk about a lot of like, you know, if you're in that low, and you don't know how the person's feeling or if they might leave you, you need to just make sure that they're gonna stay because you feel that scent, that rush, and then
Right.
everything's okay again and your whole body kind of calms down.
Yeah. So I can see that being very similar to how ADHD processes things as well. And along with that, I was wondering too, like, because I know with ADHD you tend to hyperfixate on things and situations. So you would say that you with ADHD, would you say that like there's a tendency to hyperfixate on people as well, but then maybe stray away from that once you're done hyperfixating. Is that a thing or?
Yeah, no, absolutely, right. So another thing that a lot of times that we will go through is I call it new toy syndrome. So basically it's kind of like any new hobby or any new thing or any new little toy or tool we get, we tend to really hyper focus on. So whenever you have a new person in your life, you will tend to kind of be all about that person. And this doesn't even just apply to dating relationships. This really could just be friendships. I notice like even today, where if I meet a new friend, like I'm so excited to have a new friend that like I always like that's like the person I realize like I just naturally like gravitate toward. And so a lot of times people act like it's just a dating thing, but really it is something along the lines of like, oh, I have this new thing to do, and then all of a sudden we go through this thing where we sound like such assholes, but we tend to just forget people exist, and then like we realize they exist when they contact us like 2 months later. So it's just one of those things where we focus so much of our energy that once it's done and then we found something else to capture the attention, we just like go in on it, right? And I find that to honestly be, I think it's really cool, but also not so great for relationships. But I think in other aspects, I think that hyper focus can actually just really help us achieve a lot of like cool things.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, when channeled in the right direction, I'm sure that can lead you to be achievers in a lot of ways over other people, right? Because if you hyperfixate on something long enough, it's bound to produce a result, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you keep going at it, it will like produce something out of it. So a lot of people I know just with being in the content creator space, a lot of people I know they make online courses. And so for me, a lot of people I hear they take all this time to just plan a course and do a course and they do all these other things too. And so they just like whatever. And I could just hyper focus on a course for like some depending on how long it is, like a day or like a week, and I will just have something produced out. And then I've done this before. Like I always tell people, like I've probably produced like 20 courses in my life, and I've probably written like 7 3/4 of the way books in like days. But then like I just never release them because then it's like I don't really want to do this. So it's I have it's almost like I have to see like in order for me to conceptualize it, I have to like see it because I can't really envision a lot of stuff either. So to me, if I see it in front of me, it makes more sense. So then I make it and then I'm seeing it. I'm like, actually, I don't even want to do this because now I can see it. It's just not what I want.
Interesting. And I feel like that would, like, all this would affect how you maintain relationships, right? Because certain people might feel like you're abandoning them.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, to be real, some of us actually do, right? So if you, li I mean, literally, if you have a switch that's like, oh my God, I'm super about this person, but I'm not. And then it's just like, okay, I'm done. It can feel very random to that person, right? And it gets really nuanced too, because like I'm thinking of this in the perspective of a neurodivergent individual being with a neurotypical individual. It gets really nuanced once you have like two neurodivergent individuals together, because that's what me and my wife are actually, is we're We both have ADHD, and we didn't plan that at all, but it just kind of happened. And it, honestly, for me, I can't speak for everybody because I've heard of some people doing that, and it turns out terrible for them, actually, on both ends of the spectrum. But for me and my wife, both having ADHD, it just worked out really nice.
Yeah,
Oh,
that's
that's good.
awesome. That's so great. I mean, so do you guys tend to hyperfixate on one another at times, or are, you know, is it always that way, or is it kind of, it has ebbs and flows, or?
I think it goes through flows. So, we go through phases where we're like always want to be around each other, always want to hang out. And like, I think right now we're in our phase of like, we're doing our own thing. And then about a month or so from now, probably we're gonna be all wanting to hang out again and just do stuff because new stuff's coming up and whatever. And it just works. Like, neither of us take it personally. Neither of us are really like that. Right now, actually, she's dog sitting for a week. And then she's actually just accidentally booked another dog sitting gig. So she'll be out of our house like 2 days after she comes back home. She'll be out of here. And she felt so bad. She's like, oh my God, I get to spend time with you. And I'm like, I get like a house to myself with silence and I'm not overstimulated. Like, it's fine. Like, just go do your thing and then come and just come back. And then she'll have another one in April. And it's like, okay, cool. And then, it's kind of interesting. She has one in April, but then we also go on a trip in April. So then it's like, oh, we're going to be on top of each other for a while. And then we don't see each other for a week. So it just works for us. And I think for a lot of relationships, if someone didn't have ADHD or didn't have that kind of thing people go through, I think they would think that's just really weird, but we don't find that weird at all.
Yeah, I mean that's great. I say that a lot where I'm like, I don't know, I'm nervous. I'm single, but I when dating, people often talk about relationships like they want to be together all the time, on top of each other all the time. And something that really scares me is like having to like tell someone where I am all the time or make sure that I think about them for dinner. Like I'm like, sometimes I just need to like be my own, do my own thing. And so it's refreshing to hear that, yeah, you can make that work. And if the other person also wants that and doesn't take it personally, it's not a big deal.
No, it's honest to God awesome. Like, it's honestly probably one of the, I mean, I married her, so it better be the easiest relationship I have. But it's weird, right? Because we met during COVID, so I just literally look at like, I look at our relationship and our marriage all as like one. Like, I actually sometimes forget we're married just because, like, with COVID, I just lumped 2020 to now just pretty much together. Like, I'm just now coming out of the fact that, like, this isn't like COVID times really anymore. So it's just kind of like, I don't know. It's just a weird, like, I don't know. I don't get it, but that's just how we look at it, and it works for us.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
great.
That's exactly how I see it too. I'm still, I don't know, I'm not caught up to the fact that it's 2024. Like I have to look at a calendar regularly to remind myself that we're in 2024. So how does it, or I mean, does it all connect to codependent behaviors, would you say? Like, for example, I don't know if people who have ADHD are more inclined to, like, are they more inclined to exhibit these codependent behaviors, would you say? Or.
Yeah, they're more inclined to be in codependent relationships. They're more inclined to have somebody in a way, I guess you could say, take care of them. I mean, not everybody, but like, in a lot of ways, we have a lot of deficiencies that, we don't have certain life skills a lot of the time. So if somebody knows how to cook, for example, like, this is the funny part. Me and my wife both know how to cook, so we're both kind of screwed. But like, one of the things I used to look for a partner was like, I want to see, like, did she know how to cook? Not because I'm like a woman who loves in the kitchen or anything like that, but because I just didn't know how to cook. And it'd be nice to have someone who could help me with that. Now I've learned, like, with both of us not learning how, it's like, well, someone's got to learn how to do this. And my health's not going to improve if I don't. But that's just like one resource that we would see. Another resource we often see looked for is maybe money, because a lot of people with ADHD sometimes can't hold a job very long, whether it's because they get sick of it and they have to quit, because they hyper focus on the job and then they're done, or maybe they can't keep organized at the job because of their executive functioning skills, so they get fired a lot. And so they need somebody who has like a stable income. And then as a result of that, sometimes that gets people into situations where, they're dependent on that person on money. And so they don't have their own freedom, or they don't have their own, ability to say, I want to have this or that. They don't have any say in the relationship. And that's not to say with these type of things either, too. Like, if somebody has that and they're relying on that, that's inherently a bad thing, because there's some people who they get into relationships and it just works out great and it works with that flow, but there's just some people that, unfortunately, they do take advantage of people who need those things too.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally. Because we were, when we did our ADHD episode, we were trying to kind of connect, possibly how it could overflow into codependency or, you know what I mean? But that makes a lot of sense. We didn't really touch on that. We didn't have that like nuanced understanding of maybe the motivations for someone with ADHD to get into a relationship.
There's mutual benefits there, and I
Yeah.
feel like that connects directly with codependency as well. And there's, I mean, in the codependent's mind, that's there's a benefit to this partnership when they start off, right?
Yeah.
So
No, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I even just think about right now is, since I do so much neurodiverse affirming work, this is basically you accepting your ADHD traits and you just learning to love yourself as you are, right? And then learning how to work with how your brain works. I'm thinking back to a case I had before, and obviously not to give too many details because, confidentiality, but basically what they went through was they had a partner that just was not healthy for them, and they would get into fights a lot. And the reason they were staying with this person is because they were needing to have their house clean. They didn't have the ability, or they lacked the ability, to really keep their house clean and organized. And even though their partner was, not this nice person, they just were not treating them nicely at all. They basically kept the house clean, and it was just like it helped their ADHD brain a lot. And so they were like, I can't live on my own because I literally can't keep a house clean. They had their own income, they had their own skills, but like that was the thing they struggled with. And so one of the things we had to kind of determine was like not only building up their life skills, but also how much does this mean to you to have a clean house? What parts of the home need to be clean, right? So one of the things we kind of determined was like, okay, well, my work desk has to be clean because it just overstimulates me trying to work. And I want my bed made because I can't sleep unless the room is clean. But like, out in the living room, if I throw a jacket down, I don't care about that, other than, will someone else care? I don't know, but I didn't care about that. So we had to like literally have them get into like how much of this do they actually care about? And they really wanted to leave their partner, and they did. So that's all I'll say about it without violating too much. But like, it's just one of those things where they literally just needed to learn how to clean their house, but they didn't realize that they just needed to figure out how much they're just harping on something that just didn't need to be done either.
Right, totally. That's so,
Yeah.
gosh, our brains just lie to us sometimes,
Yeah.
like then that reminds me of when I'm thinking about a relationship and I'm thinking, I can't leave this person because I get this thing from them. And my brain lies to me and says, you'll never get that with anyone else.
Yeah.
And there's no other way to get that, right? Except stay with this person. And
Right.
that's just not true. And I think that's so powerful. Just break it down, write a list, maybe even, write a list
Yeah.
of other ways that you can reach that goal that don't include this person. And then your brain can kind of release that
Right.
control.
Right. And I think there's also a level of shame and guilt when we feel like we can't otherwise do that thing without that person. And so we end up punishing ourselves in a lot of ways when we discover actually we didn't really need that person to fulfill that box, and that box. We could have actually done it ourselves if we empower ourselves to do so. Right. So yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, yeah, I don't know. So this is kind of a transition here, but I did notice in your content, in some of your content, you mentioned, women often being mi misdiagnosed as bipolar when really it's like ADHD or autism. I thought that was really interesting. Do you think you can like elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, to just get into the basic cuts of it, right? For any therapists out there, I'm actually doing a training in March. The tickets either, well, the tickets by the time this airs are going to be off sale. So I'll probably have either a recorded version of this or a repeat of this training. So just come to my page and check it out. But basically, in this training, I actually go over this a little bit. So One of the reasons that happens, if we're not talking about implicit bias, and then we'll get into that part in a minute, is symptoms of ADHD and bipolar disorder, as well as borderline, they can kind of look somewhat similar based on the person's emotional reaction. So one of the things I usually say for people with ADHD is we can kind of read someone's, we can always read our face essentially. Like we know how we're feeling. We pretty much know exactly kind of how we're feeling. Now with autism, it's a little bit different because sometimes we la they lack the affect, you know. Then when you have ADHD and autism, it's a little bit nuanced too. So I'm solely right now talking about the ADHD experience. So with ADHD, you can pretty much read how that person's feeling, or you can tell how that person's feeling. And a big reason behind that is because if you look at the emotions wheel or the feelings wheel, right, where you have all these different emotions and there's feelings like, you know, irritated and annoyed and frustrated and all these little nuanced emotions, right? I usually say we're right dab in the middle of that feelings wheel. So it's literally like happy, sad, angry, scared. You can, it's pretty clean cut what we're feeling. We don't have a very specific feeling. And so as a result, a lot of times things that happen that, you know, would just make somebody like a little eager or something like that, we're extremely happy. If something happens where it would make most people just a little bit annoyed, we're probably very frustrated or angry, right? So it's one of those things where by looking that at that on the surface, you're going to associate that with mood swings, even though they're situational. And so as a result of that, a lot of people end up getting misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder. And then I would say the second most common one would be borderline. But most common with women, it's bipolar disorder that I see. So a lot of the times they associate mood swings with bipolar disorder, and then a lot of women just get that label slapped onto them. For the reason being that, you know, and I'm also going off of the assumption too, like there's also professionals who will look at the symptom criteria and actually do testing and actually do assessments and look at how everything compares, and somehow they still come to this conclusion. But what I'm finding with a lot of the women with bipolar disorder specifically is a lot of these people see them for about 10 to 15 minutes, hear this thing, and then just slap the label on them, right? So then as a result, not only this doctor's treating them for that, and if it's your first time doing this too, you're just going to go with it. In fact, I just saw a story the other day on the news that talked about this, which if we have time, we'll go into that one a little bit. But basically this doctor was, they were locking down individuals for things that they didn't need to be locked down for in a hospital, who weren't actively suicidal, and then giving them diagnosis of like bipolar disorder. And there was like no evidence to show that they had things like this, or said they had psychosis and things like that. So go check that out on Channel 7 News in Detroit if you want to see that story at all. But it was very interesting, and it was just very affirming of some of the work that I've been doing over the last year with the stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of women who just get that label slapped onto them just because a doctor sees them for 10 or 15 minutes and has an implicit bias as to what bipolar disorder looks like. And you're most likely not going to see this in men. You sometimes see it in men, but you're not going to see it at the frequency you'll see it with women either. So it just makes me very frustrated.
Do you feel like that? The reason, maybe one of the reasons that it's more prevalent in women is because of the stereotype of like hysteria.
I think it's come down to that, right? Because a lot of the correlations I've put together too is a lot of these doctors also are older. So this is a little morbid, but you know, only time will tell to how long this might just phase out, hopefully. Whatever. But I find that to be true even with some old, you know, some younger doctors even that are somewhat doing it. I notice the ones that are misdiagnosing who are younger, they tend to be individuals who at least somewhat try to do a screening process. So that makes me feel a little bit better because they seem to be open to more collaboration at least. There's a lot of older doctors, and not to stereotype older doctors, just for the record, but it just seems to be a lot of them are the ones who the ones are doing it, because they grew up with that hysteria notion, right? So a lot of times, if you start in the field as this is how it is, and this is how you're taught, then that really does just carry over time. And you know, it's one of those things where I always say that the continuing education classes that we do, just even as social workers, let alone doctors, I don't think personally it's enough. And I think I actually, you know, I know a lot of social workers will cut my head off for this, and it's social work month right now, but it's one of those things I wish we had higher standards for our continuing education. Because a lot of times you take these classes and they're just like, the biggest fluff classes you'll ever see. And sometimes even the information like you just know is outdated as you're there. So it's just, I just wish we had higher standards for these classes though, before they can offer a CEU credit toward them.
Yeah, and the field of psychology, I mean, it's changed so much over the years, and all the nuances and the things that we're finding out about certain disorders and how they work. I mean, it's kind of insane if you think about it, that someone who might have gotten credentialed and gone through their schooling in their 70s or 80s might have much more outdated information than what we've now come across in the field, right? I mean, I'm speaking of this as like I'm acting like I'm a therapist. I'm not at all, but I'm just saying from that perspective of a therapist, I'm sure there is so much new information coming out that those continuing educations should be not only some encouraged but required to continue to do, because like you had mentioned, these people who had been in the industry much longer and back in the day, they might not understand, that hysteria is not just
Yeah.
a label we can slap on women anymore, right? So.
Right. Exactly. And I do want to preface this that the continuing education credits, they actually are required. I'm more so referring to the quality that's actually produced. So to just give logistics into the backing of how this works, essentially, because I've looked into it for my own courses, and it's really logistical to get a continuing education course, but the problem is it seems like it's just a lot of busy work. So essentially, what happens is you submit, depending on your state, you essentially submit a packet to the state with the course you have, you submit with the sources you have, and essentially the state reviews it. And then you pay $250, $500, depending on what your state does. So your state board does end up reviewing everything, but the problems that I'm seeing is that a lot of these people who are reviewing these things, they're just processing and approving maybe either outdated information or just information that's just been recycled over and over again. And so a lot of, and I also accredit that to probably being a lot of people on state boards are probably around these people's ages too and have the same experiences. So they think it's just genius probably that they're reading the stuff. So, it's just one of those things where it's still just kind of cycling even through the internal auditing process where people just aren't catching these things. And, if you're also attending classes that have been approved for this and you can just either know some of the information is outdated, or maybe even the information isn't outdated, but maybe there's an extension on some of the info, right? Maybe there's more we know about that isn't being talked about. But if that's all you've been taught and you see this class and you're an auditor, you're probably looking at it and going, yeah, this is a great class. Let's just throw it out and approve it for CEUs and let's go.
Right.
Yeah, because learning something new is one thing, but unlearning something is a whole other thing. That takes a lot of effort, because obviously if you n feel like you know something or were taught something, it spider webs and bleeds into all the other things that are connected to it. So then when you have to unlearn that, and you have to unlearn how that made you interpret all these other things. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think that changing your views on anything, I think is a super uphill battle just in and of itself too.
Yeah, that's so true. And I feel like recently on social media, ADHD has been talked about quite a bit, but a lot of the videos that I'm seeing are just people who have been self-diagnosing, just talking like without, credentials, saying, I fit the description. Do you feel like that's acceptable, or is ADHD something you have to go get diagnosed, by a therapist?
So I'll say it like this. I think that there's a difference between somebody who's experienced implicit bias for years on end and has done their own research and is now is advocating for their own care because they're realizing all these other labels didn't fit them, and somebody who just researched a blog or read a TikTok or saw a TikTok video or whatever, and just thinks that, oh, now I have ADHD. And I have plenty of people who even see my videos and they're like, oh my God, this must be what I have. And I'll comment back or make videos. I'm like, I'm not like saying you have this or not. Like you need to go get something done, right? So there's a lot of people who in the self-diagnosis movement who will say that self-diagnosing is a privilege, and so therefore we should be able to self-diagnose. I'm personally more of the advocate of like, why don't we expand healthcare so that way people can actually get a proper diagnosis? Because there's a lot of people who are self-diagnosing, and for valid reasons, right? They're playing guesswork because maybe they can't afford therapy or maybe they can't afford medical work, right? So I think that's super valid. But I just don't get why the argument isn't more toward, why aren't we expanding healthcare for all of them?
Yeah, that's a good argument. Actually, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, it's so prevalent these days for all of us to do these self-diagnosis, but like you had mentioned, it can be expensive to get the kind of testing required to do so. So I think we're all turning to social media to answer those questions.
Well, and not to mention, oftentimes you'll go to a doctor, which this has been my experience, and they just kind of don't seem to know a lot about something that you're asking
Yeah.
about, or like, I don't know, maybe they don't know the nuances, or the way they're describing it is not quite fitting what you're talking about. So you're just not getting the help from the professionals that you might need.
Right, exactly, right. Well, I think also it goes back into that implicit bias stuff we were talking about earlier, right? So if you have to unlearn, or you're refusing to unlearn, or you can't for whatever reason, right? Then a lot of times, even if you can afford the diagnosis, you're not getting the diagnosis. So I think in those situations, right, I do think so. I think self-diagnosis is valid. I also do say I think self-diagnosis is valid socially, for the reasons just being that, if you think you have something and you build life skills around it, I mean, you're not getting medication, you're not getting all this. So I guess to me, what does it really matter? If you found something that works for you, whether it's ADHD or not, because I always say a lot of neurodiverse affirming and approaches, they work for people outside of ADHD. So it's not just something for ADHD or neurodivergent people. It's literally just because, like, we're learning how to accept yourself and how you operate and how you work as an individual. I'm also somebody, like, if we really wanted to get into it, I obviously am ADHD therapist Jay, but if we wanted to move toward a world that we focus less on diagnoses and we focus more on what are you struggling with and what are your strengths, I would love to see that more, actually. And the reason I'd like to see that just a little bit more is because when you go to the doctor, you don't go there and say, oh, I think I have this or that. You tell them, oh, my throat's hurting and I have a stuffy nose, and you tell them the problem you're going through, right? And I feel like if we looked at it through more of that and taught them, how we can get them through their symptom management or their behavior management, I find that to be a lot more helpful. And yeah, there's plenty of people who come to see me where they thought maybe originally they didn't have AD or they had ADHD, but they didn't or whatever, right? And we never had that formal conversation. It was just more so we started building life skills around other stuff, and we worked with them with how they operate, and it just worked for them. So, it's a murky argument to answer, like, are you for self-diagnosis or are you not? Because I think there's a lot of stuff, but I definitely don't believe in the people who, are just going on TikTok for the first time in their life and then just see one video. And because you can do that with a lot. Like, I can't tell you how many times I went on WebMD and thought I've had cancer just because like my head hurt that day.
Yeah, that is so true. But I mean, to your point, if anything, it's promoting more conversations about these things, right? In a more open setting. So if anything, yeah, I mean, self-diagnosis might not be the greatest approach, but at least people are having conversations about it where this wasn't talked about like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for me, we kind of touched on it a little bit ago, but my whole thing when I first started seeing all these people self-diagnosed, I was just literally thinking, why do we even have a world where we feel the need to self-diagnose? Like, we're supposed to live in a world where, I'm personally of the advocacy of, like, healthcare is a right. So, I mean, come over to my page if anyone wants to debate me, I guess. But, like, I truly believe that in order, even with a capitalistic society, I mean, you need healthy workers to produce money. So why wouldn't you want to take care of those people, right? So even if you're just looking at it from that lens, so I would just probably say, we need to work toward a world where people can actually access affordable care, and everyone can, and also access competent care too.
Yeah,
so
not only
true.
affordable, but competent,
Yeah.
yes.
But because that's a problem we have too with, oh my God. So that's a problem I have too with people I have with med who have Medicaid. They'll come to our practice and they're surprised at how competent we are. And maybe it really is just the imposter syndrome or whatever for me, but I sometimes forget I'm like a competent clinician. I just feel like I'm just like someone who wants to help people through their situation, but they will tell me, all these stories they have because when you have Medicaid, you don't pay for it. So a lot of times they get mistreated a lot of the time or just dismissed, and they're actually used to it a lot of the time.
Wow. I mean, it's so sad that that's not only a thing, but a common thing.
I
Yeah.
know. Yeah. And I was also curious because I do have a lot of friends that are parents who have children with ADHD. I was just wondering, like, what strategies you might, suggest specifically for parents to deal with that.
I would first kind of start off with, I would be more solution focused than problems focused. So I'm currently in process right now of writing a book, actually. And the book is called Hire a Coach, Not a Tutor. It was actually inspired by a conversation with a client I had, actually. But basically, the reason I'm calling the book that is I think a lot of times when somebody is struggling with something, like let's say you're struggling in school with math, but you have a kid that's really good at karate. And I think this conversation came from a TikTok video somewhere. So I'm not the original thinker of this idea, but I just love the concept of it. But basically, like if you're struggling in math, but you're really good at karate, a lot of parents they will go in and invest all their resources in math to bring math up. And then a lot of times the kid with karate just, those skills don't get tuned and therefore they do nothing with them. I'm more on the side of why don't we focus on the karate stuff and maybe get by math minimally and get you through that, right? Because you could become, you could potentially become, I don't know, the next Conor McGregor, or you could become the next Ronda Rousey or Amanda Nunes or something, right? Depending, whatever, on how much this is actually interesting to you. So I'd rather just work with somebody's strengths and just really affirm who they are and what they're about, and then, get someone by minimally on the life skills they're struggling with, and then work your way up from those later. Just because if you're already bad at it, it's already gonna be super frustrating just getting through. If you're like a level two and you want to get to a level three, then it's gonna be harder to get to that point anyway. And if you just focus all of your energy on that, it's gonna be incredibly taxing, incredibly frustrating, and you're not gonna see the results at all, right? So that's something with ADHD too, is we need to see results. We want to see results. So if you're already good at something, you go from good to great at it, you're gonna see those results as opposed to something you're bad at and you just become okay at it, really, right? So I would start with that. Just start figuring out what their strengths are, figuring out who they are, really affirm who they are. And I would say constant praise too. A lot of times the parents, they immediately we want to redirect poor behavior. And I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I think that a lot of times we forget to praise our kids for actually doing a good job or actually behaving that day because we're quote supposed to do that. If you could say, like, today was a really great day, I really appreciate you, you were super helpful. I mean, that can go a long way for really any kid, but I mean, especially for ADHDers, I mean, we love praise and we crave praise in a way.
Yeah, that is so true. That's so true. That's so funny. Like, we don't think to praise kids because it's just that should be the norm in your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, you should be doing that, so I don't need to mention it. And then all I'm talking about is what you're doing wrong.
Exactly. And doubling down on what they're already skilled at can really do a lot for their self-esteem. I mean, because Megan and I always talk about with codependency and self-esteem issues, it's like, some of that could have been brought from childhood patterns where we maybe didn't feel that recognition or praise. I'm not saying specifically for Megan and I, I'm just saying in general from
Yeah.
codependency, it could come from a lack of that self-esteem factor where we needed that maybe additional praise into the things that we were doing good at or what we were skilled at as a kid. So I think
Wow.
that's really important what you just said. That's a good point, is like doubling down on what they're good at and communicating that to them.
Yeah, I mean, if no one's telling you what you're good at, then you're not going to know what you're good at because everyone's always telling you how bad or poor you operate, right? So if you just go out of your way to tell them they're good at something or they're doing good at something today or they've been very helpful today in some type of way, that really is going to be a big self-esteem blocker. And this really should be done honestly in, if your kids are still in early childhood, I mean, keep going at it. I mean, if they're teenagers, obviously do it too, but doing this in early childhood from the beginning is going to really just set you up for great success. And it's very simple. And you're also building the habits for yourself too, right? Because a lot of times parents are carrying over those. We just talked about unlearning earlier, but I mean, they carry over these traits that they learned from their parents because they watched them. And that's how they did it 20 years ago when they were a kid. So now I have to do it this way because it worked for me. And a lot of the times it doesn't work for them because especially with ADHD. So now I'm going into I'm thinking of like somebody with ADHD who's now a parent to a child with ADHD, right? Because our working memories are kind of off. So a lot of times we don't really remember a whole lot of things. Our long-term memories, ironically, do tend to be a little bit stronger than our short-term memories. But still, even with long-term memories, those even just get a little bit fuzzy too, right? So you'll have like parenting techniques where you're like, oh, my kid spanked or my parents spanked me as a kid. and it worked out for me and I did fine. But I mean, you don't remember like how scared you were for your parents for days after that when they did that, or you don't remember how angry or irritated you were. You just remember that day, and then you remember weeks or months later when you got an A on the test or something weird. I don't know, but like, and so when you think of it like that, then technically, okay, I guess if that's the result we were looking for, then maybe it did work in that moment. But that also does have to go back into now you are in a situation where you expect a partner to not praise you and actually talk down to you. And so that really trickles into your adult life later.
Absolutely.
And like you said, the emotions are no longer there, right? I mean, at that moment when you were experiencing the spanking, there was so much emotion going on. But now, later as an adult, you're just stuck with the ways that you're reacting to the world without the emotion, with the emotion sucked out of it. So it's still that's hard to navigate as an adult. So yeah, I can understand that too. Yeah.
Well, you've been so generous with your time, Jay. We just have one more question.
Yeah.
What are some things that adults with ADHD can do to, I guess, make it through their day-to-day lives, but also like if they're just starting out realizing that they are struggling maybe with some things that might be related to ADHD, what are some, resources they can do? How do they start?
Well, I think if you're looking for resources and if you're looking for a therapist, the first thing I would look into is if you go onto Psychology Today, and you could do this with any other therapist directory too, but I just go to Psychology Today because it seems to be the easiest for filtering. Basically, what you do is you're going to go on there, look in therapists in your zip code or your state, and you're going to actually select the filter for ADHD. Now, the problem with this is there's a lot of therapists on there who are still generalists, and they're maybe inexperienced, but they do have it listed to where they say they take ADHD along with like 20 or 30 other things, and half the time they either don't know about it, but it's a marketing technique basically. So I actually go over that for my therapist on my other page they recently made. It's called Therapist Marketing J, and we talked about how you don't need to checkpoint every point that. Anyway, yeah, we're going into a whole other thing. So, but you just don't have to checkpoint all of those stuff. So, what you want to look for is after you filter out the ADHD category, you want to actually read their written bio and you want to see how much they use terms like ADHD, like executive functioning, like neurodiverse affirming. Because a lot of the times it'll be in the filtered checkbox, but they won't take the time to write about ADHD in their bio. That's usually a red flag for me that this therapist probably isn't as experienced with ADHD as they list among what these other diagnoses that they have. So you really do want to look for that. And then I would always request a 20-minute consult. I know my therapists are going to actually cut my head off of this because there's some therapists I work with and they're just like, you don't ever need to do a 20-minute consult, but I am for the people. And I will sit here and tell you right now, I want to meet my therapist before I actually really know about them. The only exception to that is like if, unless they're super, nuanced with their marketing, because a lot of therapists are just gonna take multiple people anyway. But if you're like me and you have an ADHD center and that's mainly all you work with, then maybe you feel like it's gonna be a good bet and we'll go there. And I still offer 20-minute consults with people because I want to make sure we'd be a right fit and we can actually help their needs. Because I've met plenty of people with ADHD where, what they have ADHD, but they're really coming here because of a major depressive episode that's occurring too. And sometimes I feel like even with depression, I feel like sometimes that's just one of those weird, nuanced therapy things. So we had to refer this person out, I'm thinking of right now, to someone that could better help them. So, always ask for a 15-minute consultation, look in their bios, make sure they actually write about ADHD. And then as far as other resources go too, I mean, you can look up CHADD, CHADD. So they're an organization who they offer a lot of resources and support groups and things like that. They may even have online support groups. So I would even look into that stuff too. And a lot of times their resources are low cost or free too.
Awesome.
Awesome. Those are awesome resources, Jay. And once again, we're just so grateful and excited that you were able to join us
Oh,
today.
thank you so much.
And with that, I think we just have one final question for you. Do
Do you like us?
No. I'm just kidding. Yes, I do. I do.
Get you eventually. We'll get you.
Yeah. Maybe by next time we see you, we'll change your
Yes.
mind.
Oh my gosh. No, I do. No, you guys are awesome.
All right, well, you have a wonderful day, Jay. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of
All
course.
right. Take care. Have a good
Bye.
one.